Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm really happy to be back with all of you again. My name's Linda Galleon, and I know many, but not all of you. So delighted to see you, delighted to be here. And lately I've been studying the Sutra of the Wild Things. Some of you may be familiar with this book from years gone by, and I'm going to share it with you. Thus have I heard. The night Max wore his wolf suit and made mischief of one kind and another. His mother called him Wild Thing, and Max said, "I'll eat you up." And so he was sent to bed without eating anything. That very night in Max's room, a forest grew and grew and grew until his ceiling hung with vines and the walls became the world all around, and an ocean tumbled by with a private boat for Max, and he sailed off through night and day and in and out of weeks and almost over a year to where the wild things are. And when he came to the place where the wild things are, they roared their terrible roars and gnashed their terrible teeth and rolled their terrible eyes and showed their terrible claws till Max said, "Be still," and tamed them with the magic trick of staring into all their yellow eyes without blinking once. And they were frightened, and they called him the most wild thing of all and made him king of all wild things. "And now," cried Max, "let the wild rumpus start." I'm sure they're having a wild rumpus. Many pages of wild rumpus, actually. "Now stop," Max said, and sent the wild things off to bed without their supper. And Max, the king of all wild things, was lonely and wanted to be where someone loved him best of all. Then all around, from far away across the world, he smelled good things to eat, so he gave up being king of where the wild things are. But the wild things cried, "Oh no, please don't go. We'll eat you up. We love you so." And Max said, "No." The wild things roared their terrible roars and gnashed their terrible teeth and rolled their terrible eyes and showed their terrible claws. But Max jumped in his private boat and waved goodbye and sailed back over a year and in and out of weeks and through a day and into the night of his very own room, where he found his supper waiting for him, and it was still hot. So I read that story for the children's program earlier this month at City Center, because I didn't know quite what else to do, and it's my favorite children's story. But the more I read it, the more I thought what a profound Dharma teaching it is. And I had also remembered, I mean, it's actually a very, very old story, right? It's written in the 20th century, but it goes way back. Milarepa's version, Milarepa was a 12th century Tibetan yogi saint who lived in a cave high in the mountains, and he'd been doing great austerities for many years, and he was quite a yogi adept. But when one day he went out gathering firewood, and when he came home, and he was in a quite exalted state, so exalted, Milarepa adjusted his robe and carried a handful of wood back in his own hands. He was startled to find five Indian demons with eyes as large as saucers. One was sitting on his bed and preaching, two were listening to the sermon, another was preparing and offering food, and the last was studying Milarepa's books. Isn't it always like this? Following his initial shock, Milarepa thought, "Oh, these must be magical apparitions of the local deities who dislike me. Although I have been living here a long time, I have never given them offerings or compliments." So he was very polite to them, and he sang them a little song. But they did not budge. In fact, they became more vicious, and they stared balefully at Milarepa. Two of them advanced, one grimacing and biting his lower lip, and the other grinding his teeth horribly. A third, coming up behind, gave a violent, malicious laugh and shouted loudly as they all tried to frighten Milarepa with fearful grimaces and gestures. So then he does some incantations that he's learned, and he tries basically every trick in the book. You know, we all have our little, you know, bag of tricks for what to do when the demons come out. And and usually a few of them will go away each time. We can get rid of a few of them that way. They'll listen to, you know, our various ploys or reasons. But so a few of them go off. But he finally declares, "Through the mercy of my teacher, I have already fully realized that all beings and all phenomena are of one's own mind. In other words, you're not separate from me. The mind itself is a transparency of voidness. What, therefore, is there to be frightened of?" So then he sings another song. This whole book is songs that Milarepa sings of his awakening. And it ends with, "Ye ghosts and demons, enemies of the Dharma, I welcome you today. It is my pleasure to receive you. I pray you, do not hasten to leave. We will discourse and play together. We'll have a wild rumpus. Although you would be gone, stay the night. We will pit the black against the white Dharma and see who plays the best. Before you came, you vowed to afflict me. Shame and disgrace would follow if you returned with your vow unfulfilled." So in this version, all the demons leave at that point. But I actually like one that Pema Chodron tells, where all but one left at that point. And the one that was still left, who was a particularly vicious one, and we all know that one too, one that just won't budge no matter what we do. Milarepa says, "All right." And he goes and puts his head inside the demon's mouth, and then the demon flees. But I really like the story of where the wild things are, because it focuses on them having a wild rumpus, that they're dancing together. And basically, there is nothing other than dancing. We often don't see that. We think that dancing is going to look a certain way. It's going to be us leading or us following, or it's going to be smooth, basically. As long as it's smooth, as long as it's the dance that I want, I'll call that dancing. And I'll say, yes, I'm dancing with my life and all is well. But we're still dancing even when it's a little rough, even when the steps look to be off, even when we stumble. If we watch a movie, it's very clear that it's all part of the story. If we see a work of art, it's very clear that every brushstroke is part of that work of art. But we somehow think in our own lives that we can pick out bits and pieces, and that's not me, that's not my life, I'd like another chance to start over, please. Basically, this doesn't count. But it all counts. It's all part of this life, and there's nothing that needs to be excluded. So how do we love everything? How do we love and accept all the beings of our own minds? Huineng taught, save all the beings of your own mind. You know, we chant, I vow to save all beings. And sometimes that might seem overwhelming. Sometimes it might seem so overwhelming that it's really rather safe because it seems quite impossible. But the place to start very often is with the beings of our own minds, who are very persistent and keep showing up. All these parts of ourselves that make their appearances and disappearances, who hide out, who show up just when we least expect it, who get us into trouble, Or maybe they're the ones who make us look really good, and they're the ones that get us into trouble, not outwardly, but in our practice, because we get so attached to them. We want to be that good boy or good girl or the good employee or whatever it is. So how do we save all the beings of our own mind? How do we love all the beings of our own mind? The first thing is exactly what Max said. Be still. Can you be still with all the beings of your own mind? Can you be still with that knee that aches? Can you be still with that itch at the end of your nose? Can you be still with that itch in your soul that just wants to do something or not do something? Whether it's writing that email you know you have to write and don't want to, can you be still with that? Can you be still with wanting that extra piece of cake when you know it won't make you feel so good? Can you be still when the person that you most love in the world says something that hurts you so badly? Or when the person you have such a hard time with says something really nice? Can you be still inwardly with everything that arises? This isn't the same as doing nothing. We continue our lives and we do what needs to be done. But if you can be still, if you can actually receive whatever arises, this is dancing. This is dancing. When we can be still with everything that arises, we can be present and open, and we can see where the dance takes us. We can lead, we can follow, we can meet what arises completely. And in that stillness, in that dance of stillness, there is nothing to fear. And out of fearlessness, love blossoms so easily. What else could there be? Nothing to be afraid of, nowhere to go, nothing to do. Everything becomes very simple. Maybe not easy, but simple. Because you can see there's some clarity, there's some calmness. So we start with the stillness in our body, because it's often very hard to still our minds. Coming back to the body, coming back to the breath, shifting out of thinking. Can you feel your breath? And you just be with each sensation that arises just as it is, not adding anything extra. Simple. Really simple and surprisingly difficult. That's why I like that Max had a trick, a magic trick. He said, "Be still." And he stared directly into their terrible, rolling yellow eyes. Suzuki Roshi says, the worst thing that we can do is to ignore things. Need to watch. Need to watch what arises. But give it a lot of space. Many years ago, before I started Buddhist practice, my practice was to go out to the desert by myself. I had no idea what I was doing, and I'm so glad I survived. But I remember one time, maybe the second or third time I'd gone out, and I never had any agenda, and I didn't know what I was doing, what I should be doing. I was somehow trying to settle my mind, but I hadn't a clue about what to do. But the powerful thing about silence, even if it's as unstructured as that, was that by the third day, just like by the third day of Sesshin, things usually get a lot quieter after going through all the initial difficulties. And something fell away, and I was present in a way that was quite refreshing, quite fresh, quite new. And I remember having this overwhelming gratitude for the desert, because I felt that it would be patient for me. I didn't trust that other people would wait for me to arrive, would wait for me to show up fully, because I was afraid of all the other things, all the other wild things and demons and parts of myself I thought were so unacceptable. I thought if I calm down my usual frantic papering over of all those demons, that no one's going to sit around for what has to happen until I get to the quiet place. And I realized that I took myself to the desert because it was big enough and wide enough and settled enough that it wasn't going to get hurt. I couldn't hurt it. It was safe. It would wait for me. It would be patient. All this sky, all these mountains, all this earth was a big enough space to find the space inside myself. And all that space exists inside each one of us. You already know it. You know that there's at least one thing in your life that other people marvel at you for being able to do that they can't do, that you are fearless around. Something that you can sit with, that maybe you couldn't sit with before, or maybe it's just never been a problem. But I think all of you have had the experience, even if it's only here and there, of what it is to be free from fear, to be able to dance with what arises, to know how that is. So it's very important to notice that, and appreciate it and recognize it. Because whatever we pay attention to grows. Whatever we feed in our mind, in our attention, in our awareness, gets reinforced and grows and gets stronger. So this is another kind of magic trick, because what we pay attention to, we tend to want to grab onto, hold on to it. Oh, that's a good thing. I'll hold on to that. Now I'll be safe forevermore. Of course, as soon as we do that, it's all over. We're just back into something stuck again. It's another demon. It's another thing to let go of. So that's the trick. How to appreciate and attend to staying right on that edge of presence, confident fearlessness, openness to what's arising, and not to grab onto it. How to just keep on going, moment after moment. So at the beginning, it's kind of like learning to drive a car. You know, you get too far over the line one way, and you turn back the other way, turn back the other way. So it's kind of careening from one side to the other. Oh, I'm holding on, oh, I'm averting, holding on, averting. And after a while, you get a taste for what it is to be present. And you're not so worried about left or right. You can just keep going forward. And the correcting happens by itself. And this is continuous practice. So are there any questions? Yes.
I thought it was interesting what you said about what we attend to, what we pay attention to can grow, and I find it helpful to remember that that's true in terms of like negativity as well.
Yeah. They did some fascinating studies, I think, about 15 years ago in the area of depression. And one of the symptoms of depression is ruminative thoughts. I love that, ruminative. Comes from cows, rumen, the something, For a long time they thought that it was just a symptom of depression. But according to these studies, it's actually a primary cause of depression. That when we start thinking in those ways, it actually changes the neural pathways in the brain and the brain chemistry, and it creates a depressive state.
I read similar things.
And actually, cognitive behavioral therapy will change your blood chemistry, just like Prozac will. Pretty powerful stuff, brains, minds, brains.
You must hear side effects, maybe.
Yes, much nicer ones.
And is that the flip side of the, is it Norman Cousins who did the laugh or smiling therapy?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, oh, and I love studies. Somehow I believe them. I have a scientific mind, so I believe them. You know, it feels like beyond just positive thinking or something. But they've also done studies on if people keep a gratitude journal in the evening right before they go to sleep, they have much better sleep, which I found really interesting. They better fall asleep earlier, wake up less, and have a better quality throughout the night. So. Nothing else, maybe we'll have some tea. Something else will come up.